This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
About this news from Ben Simmons.
It's not news, bro. Ben Simmons is not news. He's gossip.
Gossip. And God, man. Okay. Bill Simmons, not Ben. Bill, right? Okay. I don't know why I always fuck his name up. Okay. So Bill Simmons suggests that the Lakers should go after Sam Presti. Now, Bill was looking for a headline and just fucking around, but he's like, the Lakers should just offer him $50 million for 1 year. I mean, essentially, they would have to offer him a part ownership to come over there for that type of money, because I looked it up. Pat Riley makes the most money as a GM. He makes $11 million. The next GM, I think, makes like $10 million, but it doesn't really matter. The coaching staffs, right? Popovich makes $11 million a year. So for the fact that somebody would say that you pretty much take their salary and times it by 4.5, right, and then give it to Sam Presti is ridiculous. But Mark, I could see the Lakers reaching out, or a team like the Lakers that are trying to attract a championship caliber team and offer Sam a ridiculous amount of money, maybe $20 million a year, $17 million a year, to come take over their program. I mean, is that something that you could see?
Yeah, I think a lot of teams should consider doing it, but okay. Like the Lakers, $50 million, like you said, that's, you know, they're just pulling that out of their ass, but didn't Pat Riley get part ownership of the Heat? I think he did. So with Riley getting like some sort of ownership with the Heat for going from the Knicks to the Heat, it makes me think like the only reason a team would do that, it's not because you're the Lakers. If you're the Lakers, you can't like give out pieces of ownership. Like the Heat were a team that hadn't done anything. They weren't far off from, I think they were a franchise team not long before that. Like, but they had gone, I think, probably a decade without winning anything.
Like Dan Marley, Lonzo Mourning. They had a bunch of those guys that
they needed,
made them relevant for years.
They felt like they needed like somebody to guide them to a championship, which Riley eventually was able to do whenever he brought Shaq in to team up with Dwayne Wade and, you know, that really good team there. But my point is the Lakers giving away part ownership of their team, that's not going to happen. So how much money is it? Like, could they pay Sam Presti? You're thinking like that number 20 to 25. I think Bill Simmons was thinking a number like 50 because the Thunder couldn't economically match it. And for the Lakers, it would be worth potentially like $1 billion if they were successful in like taking this franchise to a championship again. So I understand that, you know.
I could see the Thunder matching anything up to $15 million. That's simple. Like the Thunder will go and match anything up to $15 million. And I think that's the thing is that they recognize how valuable Sam is. Now, if you're looking at any more, I think that's where it gets a little shady. And that's why I say it has to take that 17. Mark, I don't think 25 is even fathomable, but I do think 17 to 22 would be fathomable, especially if they bought him a house as a bonus there, or, you know, did something crazy like that. Dude, or bought his house in Oklahoma.
You're talking
for $6
about the Lincoln Riley deal.
Exactly. And I think that's what it has to come down to is that, you know, looking at it like that is seeing that that's the only way that Sam Presti would leave. Even then, like, I have to look at it like this is that does Sam Presti want to uproot his family? You know, does Sam Presti want to say, I'm going to gamble and bet on myself that I can do this? You know, like,
well, how are the greats in basketball measured in the end? Rings. So my thing about Presti is like he might be able to get a quick ring with the Lakers, but like I have a feeling that this rebuild, him sticking out for the long haul, like the team sticking out for the long haul includes him, because I feel like he has a sense that if he builds this properly, he can get multiple rings. And you know, maybe even turn into a dynasty. I feel like that's the direction this team is headed. So, like, if that's his goal, right, like, where are the Lakers along that line? Like, he could quickly build around LeBron, maybe win one or two, and then be in full rebuild mode not long later.
My question to you, though, is do you go and get Sam Presti if you're cool with being whatever right now? Or do you go get Sam Presti if you're going to go rebuild and tear down?
I think you would get Sam Presti for the Lakers to do both. Like, build as quick as we can around LeBron, you know, but while also being ready to do a rebuild. But the thing is, could the Lakers afford to have the patience that the Thunder can? No, they can't. So that's why I look at it and I'm like, for Presti, he needs to prove that his grand experiment, like, will work. For him to leave it incomplete, no matter how much he's getting paid, will be like him selling itself short. Like,
sure.
If he's able to put together a dynasty, he will be offered ownership in other franchises, similar to what Pat Riley was offered when he went to Miami. Mm. And I could be wrong. I didn't look this up, but I just remember that was part of the deal. Like, he was getting a big time package. And I remember being like, why did the Knicks let him go? And it was like, well, initially he wanted to be the GM and the coach. They didn't want him, but Miami was able to entice him with an enormous package that is, you know, really hasn't been matched that I can think of for anybody. So, like, I think about for Presti, what more could he want? And if somebody else offers it, like, is he going to give the Thunder a chance to match it? Because Lincoln Riley didn't. And it's not about matching dollar for dollar. Right now, like, based on what he's building, it's about matching opportunity too. And I think that's why if we were 4 or 5 years later down the road, like, and he felt like his, like, he had built out what he's trying to build out, and at least maybe you could start to see what was being built. But right now we're still in this phase where, like, I don't know, it's like an abandoned project if he left right now. I just don't see him being that type of person. What do you think?
Yeah, that's where I have to agree with you. For him to leave this completely undone like this, I would be shocked. If he looked at it like this year as being the last year of drafting, and we end up with the number one and number two pick, or number one and number four pick, or something like that, and he feels that this is his way of okay, Oklahoma City, I gave you all the pieces to succeed. Now you can succeed without me. This is who I would pick for me to replace me. And I think that that would be a possibility. But right now, I feel like you said, everything is so incomplete, and it's not, you know, it's not where we would consider ready for that next move, that next step up. You know what I'm saying? So I look at all the strengths of this entire team, and yeah, these guys are really, really good. They're really, really young. But one of our strengths is our bench. You know, like, watching the playoffs, man, I'm starting to see how valuable our bench is going to be in the playoffs. And that's just Sam Presti's vision right there. You know, I always look at a bench as the GM's vision, because you got your coaches that love the starters and they're always in love with the starters, and maybe one or two guys off the bench. But the rest of the guys, you know, there's always this, like, disconnect, because in a way it's the GM's guys that he's placed in there for good prices or whatever else. The fact is that these are what I would consider the gems of Oklahoma City, is that bench. So Sam Presti is very in tune with Coach D. So in order for Sam to get up and leave this organization like he would, I mean, I think you would have to try to take Coach D with him. You know, like, he needs somebody like that that's going to be 110% there with him, that he can trust, that he's going to be able to put the people that he wants in, playing the people that he needs in. So, again, I think it's a much bigger move. And if Sam Presti is getting offered an insane amount of money to do so, and he looks at it like this is an opportunity to allow his family to, you know, like I said, a 5-year, $100 million guaranteed contract, like insanity numbers. Like, I don't know if a GM in the league would turn down $100 million for 5 years to come to an organization to do whatever. Like, I don't see Sam saying no.
Yeah.
So much money.
It's a lot of money.
But I mean, money's not everything. And Sam could be like, you know what? Oklahoma City will give me $75 million over the course of 5 years. Right?
Right.
And I'm cool with that. So, because I'm willing to give up $25 million for happiness, because Sam seems like that. But I've never known anybody to turn down $25 million to do the same exact job that you're doing. Like, I mean, if somebody came, Mark, and offered me $25 million right now, right? To do this Oklahoma City Thunder podcast across the way, I would be like, Mark, context. I love you. But $25 million is a lot of money.
It's different context, though. I mean,
true.
I know what you mean. But, well, we don't know anybody that would do the same job for $25 million less. There have been players who have taken favorable contracts that have been about that much or more. Like, and sometimes because they sign at favorable times, like Steph Curry did, where he was coming off injury. But there's also times where, like, people just take less because they want to stay with the organization because, like, maybe they have a couple of offers that are in that $25 million range, but their team can only offer a minimum. So they stick around and they end up playing for 8 more years with an organization at, like, a Nick Collison role, sure. Right? So that type of stuff happens. The question, I think, for Presti would be one thing. How much does he like working with the people he works with? Because you can put, like, a dollar number on happiness, right? Like, how happy are you really can be equated directly to how much you're getting paid for athletes. Like, that, they always act like, sure, I want respect. Yeah, you want it in dollars and cents. But the truth is, like, for a guy like Presti, if he feels like, like, the Buss family is interacting with his work and is disturbing and telling him who he has to hire and who, like, all these decisions he has to run by, like, the Buss family and Jeannie, and they don't like it, and Phil Jackson's, like, shadow operating the organization, like, you can take that $25 million and you can shove it up your ass, because there's no way in hell that it's worth it. So, I mean, that's where I look at it, and I'm like, there's a lot that goes into this, you know?
Sure.
It's about not just work happiness, but family happiness in an environment, right? In L.A., like, this was not particularly, like, I know it was a disappointing year, but this wasn't, like, a bad year from, like, a number of perspectives, except for their final performance on the court, right? Sure. They had LeBron, right? They had AD. So they have these great players. So expectations being high is why they, like, melted down. It wasn't an injury year, I mean, even though that was a big part of it. They had those guys enough to perform highly, and they didn't. So how would you feel if you were the GM? Like, Pelinka is, it feels like he's on the hot seat, whereas, like, 2 years ago he wins a championship and everybody's like, oh, he's a genius and they're going to just rack him up. That's how fast things turn around. So, like, with Presti, he's been able to go into a long-term rebuild and nobody's ready to crucify him. Well, there have been some people who, I guess, have sent some death threats. So I don't mean nobody's willing to crucify him. It's just the community's still embracing him. Would, sure, that happen in L.A. if he was trying to execute a big plan with all these outside voices within the ownership, within the fan base, within the media? I don't know if you'd have time to execute a long-term plan. That's why I wonder, maybe he would turn down the 25.
It's intriguing. I mean, that's what we're talking about, at least, is, like, the fact is that Sam could, you know, he could say no. But then again, if I thought Sam was going to leave, I would straight up, the only place I would see him going is back home, you know, to his childhood favorite team. That's the only place I truly see him ever leaving. And the only reason that would happen is if the Boston Celtics just, you know, shit all over every place and they have to rebuild, essentially.
And then people talked about it, bro. People did. They talked about it before Brad Stevens was, you know, moved up. It was maybe the go after Sam Presti. His name comes up every single time a team is in trouble, right?
A big market team.
What?
A big market team.
Yeah, somebody that can pay them, like, serious money. And I don't know.
That's why, dude, I'm saying it's going to eventually happen where a team's going to offer him insane money. But I think you're right. At this point, everything is undone. You know, like, if Sam Presti has the perfect draft this year and he feels like, you know, Coach D is going to stay and his assistant GM is incredibly amazing and he feels like OKC is in a good spot, I could see him shifting for an insane amount of money for the right opportunity. But
yeah,
I don't think that this is something that he's willing to do right now. I just don't see it, Mark. I mean, like his family's here, they're all set. You know, like he's made this a thing that Oklahoma City is where he wants to raise his family for now. You know, like that's a big thing. You know, it's very well known that my family, me and my three kids, my wife, we move around every 2 or 3 years with the military, you know? Like we've never lived in a place longer than 3 years. So stabilizing is something that we've always liked to do and like to talk about. Like, what would it look like if we stabilized for 4 or 5 years? Like, Sam Presti, when you get to this place and you fall in love with the community, you fall in love with the people, you fall in love with your work, like, $25 million is a shit ton of money, but for happiness, that's what I keep going back to, is that would he be willing to roll the dice that his family's going to be as happy as they are in Oklahoma City? I don't know, man.
Yeah, dude, and let's talk about some playoff basketball, bro, because you got...
Oh, yeah, please do.
All right, so we got the Heat. They close out the Sixers, and everybody's begun the process of doing what they do in Sixerland when they get eliminated, pointing the finger at players and the coaches, and everybody starts this process where they eat their own. It's awesome. It's Philadelphia. Brotherly love. You got to love it. So, Miami, great job. Going to the conference finals again. And here we are, dude. Dallas whooped up on the Suns. So, we got the game 7 we were hoping for, bro.
Yeah, and not just that, though. Let's talk about, I mean, so we got Thursday's games, the Suns versus Mavericks. That was just an ass-whooping. And then you got Heat and 76ers, 99-90. Mavericks, 113-86, the Suns.
Yeah.
Like Mark said, game 6 there. If you want to jump back to Monday, though, after we were done on the podcast, the Celtics won right here. Now the series tied 2-2, 116-108. And the Warriors beat the Grizzlies, right, to go up 3-1. The crazy thing about this is that we talked about Mondays. I don't know why I went back to Mondays because we should have just talked about Wednesdays. I get so mixed up on these days so far. Bucks won, right, against the Celtics.
Right, and it changed everything, right? Because yep. I had been thinking the Celtics were going to put that win on.
I was watching that game, and I turned it off, right, because the Celtics were just killing the Bucks. The Bucks looked lost out there. And then all of a sudden they come back in a wild, wild comeback.
Yeah.
Behind 40 points from Giannis and 11 rebounds.
I know. He just willed them to that win, bro. It was crazy.
Totally threw him on his back. But then let's talk about the other game on the Dude, in the West.
We called it that Memphis Grizzlies game where Memphis blew him out without Ja. And we said we thought it could happen. Here they are now. So we're talking about what's going to happen. I guess we're talking about what's going to happen later on today, bro, because we're talking about the Grizzlies and...
Well, let's talk about the Grizzlies for a second. After the game or during the game or whatever, the Grizzlies GM becomes the youngest GM in history to get the award.
Yeah.
You want to guess how old he is, Mark?
You already told me, bro.
Oh, I did. Zach Clement is 33 years old, guys.
Yeah.
33 years old.
Executive of the year, dude. And... That's awesome, bro. And they're playing tonight against the Warriors, right? The series is at 3-2. Warriors are up, but I feel like Memphis might have this momentum, bro. Like they are tough to beat without Ja. They're tough to beat with Ja, but see, that team is.
What do you think? This is where I disagree, though. Where they're back in San Francisco, where they want to be. Like, if you watch the way the Warriors just, like, lost this last game, it was like, you know what? We're cool with losing this game. We'll take it back home. You know, like, that's the way it felt.
Look, okay, you can have a game like that if you lose by, like, 12. But yeah. You get whooped by that much.
True.
Bro, like, the pressure's on. Because if you lose game 6, you're fucked.
Yeah, man.
Like, you have to know right. You have to know that from personal history from them. Like, so... Game 6, so much pressure's on it, and they just lost by a lot. And, yeah, I get it. Like, but I think here's the thing. When you go back to the original Like, Warriors championship team, their motto is strength in numbers. And you look at what the Grizzlies put out there, they live by that. And the Warriors, they look like they have, like, you do your thing, and then I'll do my thing. And then, you know, they're lacking unity. But when they look good, they look good. But I think one thing we've learned with the Warriors is you always know the spurt is coming. You can't let the Warriors play from ahead because they're going to put on a run. Can you create enough of a distance that when their run hits and it comes in a flurry, like a great boxer, right? Have you put on a show enough strength where that doesn't matter, right? And that's what they looked like. The Warriors looked like a boxer past their prime, putting on a flurry, but getting beat by a heavyweight that's young. That's what it looked like the last time they played. So what do you think we're going to get tonight? I'm thinking, check this out, dude. I legitimately think we're looking at another blowout, okay, by the Grizzlies. I think that's how good this team is when they play together.
I agree. And I think if Dra was out there, I would 100% be on board with that. But my point is that the Warriors are a championship dynasty, and they know what it takes to be able to win. So I'm going Grizzlies tonight. I know. It's not what you like to hear, but I feel like it's the
You're going Grizzlies tonight. That's what I was going, bro. Do you mean that?
I'm sorry. I'm going Warriors tonight. But going in the East, man, I got to say, I'm going Celtics. They're in a must-win situation, and I feel like Tatum is going to come out and put up a spectacular game. Jaylen Brown's going to be too much. I think it's going to go at 7 in Boston there, which will be great. What do you think?
All right, Milwaukee, they're champions. They know what they got to do. If they don't put the Celtics away right now, they're going to lose the series. They don't know that. They know they got a game 7 if they lose, but they understand the importance of the moment. And what I noticed with Boston last game was there was nobody who felt like I'm going to be the closer. Like, Tatum puts up great numbers, and he's a closer. But I felt like in those final moments, maybe it was just Smart made a series of mistakes, and that's why it looked like there was no closer out there. But it wasn't like I saw somebody go get the ball and say, this is my moment to finish the game off for my team. So the combination of Holiday playing really, really well and people not stepping up to the moment kind of created a comedy of errors for them to lose the game. And I think because of that, I have to lean Milwaukee. And I think all of a sudden we're going to be looking at the Sixers and the Celtics backstabbing, a huge amount of backstabbing going into the offseason. I don't know how it's going to be handled, but expectations are high for these teams, and I really do think Milwaukee's going to throw out a knockout blow. Giannis goes for 50. Holiday does what he does, but like, I questioned when Milwaukee spent so much for Holiday. I questioned the logic in making that decision, and it's clearly it was what they needed, and here he is. Yeah. Proving big time basketball on both ends of the court.
No doubt, man. And it's exciting to see that he's able to get some stuff done like that. All right, man. Talk about Sunday. Mavericks and Suns game 7.
Oh my God.
And if needed, Bucks and Celtics with game 7. But let's just talk about the game 7 now, Sunday.
This is probably the most exciting game 7 I can think of in the last 5 years minimum, bro. Like,
and it's sick.
It's, I don't know. You got, yeah, I don't know, dude. They look so equally matched in so many ways, except for the way they just keep blowing the other one out. And it's like, are we going to get a blowout? I don't think so. So who wins a close game? I mean, you got Chris Paul, proven closer, and Luka, bro. Luka, what else can we say about Luka? I mean, the dude is at the highest level. And here's the thing I've noticed about Chris Paul. If the game is one possession in a game 7, he's prone to make mistakes. I don't know how. I've just seen it. Like, I've seen it when we played the Clippers, right?
Yep.
Like, they had us back against the wall, and then he put on a couple of turnovers, and I don't know why. It just happened. So I'm going Dallas, bro. I'm thinking they're going to pull it off.
Wow. I'm glad, because I wanted to go Suns, because with all the things that you said, yes, you're right. But Devin Booker, man, I feel like he's going to come out and just do something insane. And if we have an opportunity to see Devin Booker and Luka going at each other, you know, for 35 plus points, It means it goes to the rest of the team. And I just like the Suns, the way they're set up. They're having trouble, obviously, consistently getting that ball inside. But Chris Paul, man, he's had a hard time against the Mavericks. And I say that because he's playing against a much larger player than him, whether it's Brunson or it's Luka or the combination of whoever they throw at him. He's having a hard time getting to the hole because of it. And that's fine because he's figuring out everything else. But if he figures it out tonight, Mark, or I'm sorry, Sunday night, it's over. Straight up, it's over.
Bro, let me ask you this. Who would you anticipate has the bigger game seven? Luka or Booker? Oh, I can't believe you're even thinking about this, bro.
Well, I'm saying Booker, man.
No way, bro. You're saying it because you're hoping.
No, I'm saying it because you're like, hoping. Sometimes game sevens, it's about maturity and age.
And that's why
I look at Booker. Like he got to the finals last year. You know, he knows what it takes to that next level.
You think? No, I'm just saying, like, he's not Kobe, right? We know that about him. He's not going out there. How many
players have scored 70 points in the league in a game?
Yeah, but that was a joke, okay? Like, I know he did that, but it was just, that was a show of the fact that he has killer instinct. But the question is, can you do it in game seven? I believe it. Everything I know about Luka says yes. And I wonder, is Booker the type of leader that puts a team on his back in game seven? Bro, like, there's a difference between being the type of player that does that and being Allen Houston. And I got nothing wrong with Allen Houston. He was a good player back in his day. But Booker turns into Allen Houston when he's not a star. And so I'm like saying, game seven, stars amongst stars. Luka's putting up 40, 12, and 12.
Okay.
And Booker, he put up like 24, 26. I don't see him putting up 40.
All right. I'll tell you this. I'll bet you a dollar that Devin Booker has more points than Luka.
Dollar, bro. I wish you'd bet more than that, dude.
I know. I'm being a pansy right now. We'll go a dollar just to save our pockets.
Oh my god, dude.
And then on top of that, I want to say this is that I'm voting for the Mavericks to win this if Memphis is somehow able to win, because I would love to see either Mavericks or Memphis make it to the finals this year.
Dude, it's so obvious that Mavericks are going to win this game to me because, nice. Like, I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
You're good.
Like, I'm thinking about this. I'm like, what makes the Mavericks work? Luka's out there and he can draw the attention of the defense, and then the other guys hit big shots that they're generally open for, right? Like, okay, and what makes the Suns work? Their offense has to flow. They got to get in pick and rolls. They got to get the ball in the wings. What's more reliable when the game tightens as the game seven goes along? Bro, when that tightness happens toward the second half of game seven, I'm telling you, the Suns are going to be prone to make mistakes. The passes are going to go through their hands. Whereas out there, it's going to be Luka running the show like a motherfucking wizard. Bro, and I'm telling you, dude, he's going to be what everybody thinks Chris Paul is. He's going to be out there and be like perfect and control everything. But on top of that, like, because here's the thing, the Suns have to have the offense flowing for to be effective. I know I said that earlier. Luka can just control the pace and tempo of the game by himself and be the best chance to score. Like, I don't know. It's like he's LeBron and CP3 at the same time as being Ray Allen. Like, he's got all those fucking skills at the same time. Like, you just got to keep the ball in his hands, let him set the tempo and pace, and just go. Like, there's never been a better game seven player in my lifetime other than, like, I don't know. I'm getting carried away, bro. I'm getting extremely carried away, but you got to think Mavericks are going to be favorite here.
I love the faith you have in him. Like, he's... The hard-on that you have for him is very, very obvious, and I like it because there's very few players I've ever seen in my lifetime that's been able to control games like this. And to me, it goes back to the whole idea of the NBA is changing. You know what I'm saying? That's why, you know, Josh Giddey is so valuable. That's why Shea is so valuable, is because the morphing of the NBA that's happening in front of us is proof right there with Luka. That's why we're going to continue seeing all these players that we love to see on this Oklahoma City Thunder get better. It's obvious to me that if we had two players that play the game like Luka on the team, right, it's over. And I feel like we already have two guys that can play, maybe not to Luka's level, but that can play to a high, high level like that. And maybe one day they can get to that point. But, you know, I look at Luka as being a top five player in the NBA. And I really believe that he's special like that. There's a lot of people that disagree or even agree with me, depending on who you are and what type of expert you are. Like, Luka, to me, is that type of player that you have to look at and circle and say, this is the type of player that changes the NBA, not for a couple of years, but for 15 to 20 years. And that's the type of player LeBron is, you know, that's the type of player Michael Jordan is. That's the type of player Kareem and all these other great players that have come through the league, is that they don't change the game for just 5 or 6 years, man. They change the game for 2 decades. And that's what I look at with Luka, is that he has that ability. He has that desire, and to me, it's going to be fun to watch his game mature. And I look at it like, how many rings will he win? Like, is he going to be one of those guys that's going to be able to pull off 6 or 7 rings? Yes, if he gets the right people around him. Absolutely.
He's got to stay healthy. I mean, and like, but yeah, I mean, the question is the right people around him. And I think, like, since I said he's the best, you know, in my lifetime at game sevens, as far as like the optimal player, if you were to like build it in a petri dish, you'd want a player who could play point guard, who could also play shooting guard, that also could drop down and play power forward and center, right? Like, the guy, and ideally at his size, he's a small forward in the NBA, the modern NBA, but he, and that pace controlling in game seven is so important, not needing somebody else to get you the ball, right? Like KD, like game sevens, bro, he starts pushing to get the ball further and further up the court, right? He wants the ball earlier in the offense, which makes sense. But, like, just having that natural point guard that can also shift into these positions as the offense flows, it's ideal. And that doesn't mean he's going to be the best. Like, obviously, other people have performed better. But just like in a petri dish, if you're going to design a player, this is the ideal prototype for game seven. So to beat the Mavericks, which I don't think they're the championship, like, team this year because of their lack of depth, you know, but I think you got to beat them before you get to game seven, because if they keep pushing game sevens, and bro, how about Luka calling it out, just saying like, everybody's cocky when you're up, like he comes out there and puts on a show, and now Suns don't seem so cocky anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, when they're up 2-0 and everybody's talking about how they just shut down Luka from the first 2 games and how that's, you know, Dallas was done, like, it's crazy to me, you know, like,
yeah.
I look at what Luka's been able to do, and I'm really impressed, straight up. And I don't know, looking at his stats and how he's been able to improve every year for the last 4 years, it's pretty cool, man. Like, again, this is going to be something that's going to be fun to watch, you know, the type of player that he could be in the next few years. We've seen players come in and out and fade out really, really fast. But you said it the best. If he stays healthy and he's able to play 65-plus games a year like he has been, then we're talking about one of the amazing players. Now, 65 out of 82 games, you say, that's a lot of missed games. And it is. But the modern NBA, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of the stars missing 10 games, 11, 12 games throughout the season because of rest. And I think it's something we'll see a lot in Oklahoma City, because why wouldn't you allow these guys to rest, you know, extra games here and there, that maybe they don't match up well against a player or two, that they don't have to play against them for a little while.
Absolutely. So I think that's something to leave it at, but it's something we anticipate with the Thunder too, is, you know, let the stars rest some more. But we appreciate everybody joining us, and we'll see you on Monday. Thanks again, and as always, this episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Painter.